Continuation of the interview with Beverly Sutton. This will be side A. End of ID. So, Beverly, just before we go back to the childhood stuff, you've got 4 years to run on your lease here now. So what do you think the future holds?
For me or for the area or just
both,
in general?
But first for you.
Well, I'm in a slightly difficult situation at the moment whereby I'm basically working part-time, but I'm working to pay the rent. I have a decision to make about whether or not I continue to work for the next 4 years, but I'm 65, and just so that I can pay the rent. And certainly if they double the rent, which is was the review recommendation last October, that would make it very difficult. So, and also what it means is that, okay, I pay that increased rent, but at the end of the day, there really wouldn't be a lot left in the kitty, you know, savings-wise. So I've got some decisions to make, obviously, about my position here. I obviously have an alternative. I could go to the department and say, well, you can have the house back. I won't continue on with this last 4 years, and I want to become a Department of Housing regular tenant, I guess. And then it's up to them as to whether or not they'll accept me on that basis.
But presumably within the area.
Oh, absolutely, yes, that's right. I suppose in the back of my mind I thought, well, I'll be nearly 70 by the time the... I'll certainly be 69 or so by the time my lease is up. And when you're 70, they'll take you in at Darling House. So maybe you know, that's an option, but who would know? And certainly a couple of other landladies have said to me that that's their option, that as soon as they have nowhere to go, that they will, you know, their names are down at Darling House. But, of course, those landladies are in their 80s now, so they wouldn't have a problem, I don't think, with getting in.
But if you stopped working, would they not drop your rent to a quarter
because,
of your income?
No, because, you see, unless I... if they were to accept me as a normal tenant, yes, they probably would. Well, they would. I'm sure they would, but because I have they deem this a commercial lease, so whatever the rent is, the rent is. So that is why I would have a decision to make. I can't go to them and say, well, look, I mean, I've never made, even as a residential, never made any money out of it, let alone anything else. So I couldn't go to them and say, well, I'm not working as much, therefore I can't afford to pay your exorbitant rent, but this is what I'm earning, and you know, will you give me a reduced rent? I doubt that on a commercial basis they would do that, no.
And are you particularly attached to this house?
Well, it took me a lot of years. When I first moved into it, it was a very sad house. And it had, I mean, you know, you see, my mother always used to say to me, well, you're very fey, you're like my mother, my Irish grandmother, you see. She just used to say that, and I think that I have a sensitivity to things around me, and I certainly believe in spirits and what have you, because I know my grandmother used to come and visit me when I lived in her house around in Lower Fort Street, because I'd hear her on the stairs, middle of the night, and I knew it was her, but you know, that's another thing, But when I moved into this house, I felt, you know, it was a terribly sad house. It had been a boarding house for a long, long time. And by definition, a lot of people that live in boarding houses aren't necessarily happy people. Often there's a history of alcoholism, of divorce. Mostly you find a lot of men. They're predominantly men, or certainly in this area they were. They might be solitary people like sailors, who, you know, would not have family or had divorced or who had a drinking problem or whatever. So I always felt that this house needed a lot of love and attention. So it took me a long time, I think, to make it feel happy. So, yes, I am attached to it. And also, I've always loved old houses. I even as a kid, I used to love going into a lot of the different houses around the area. And I used to love imagining who had lived here 100 years ago and how they'd lived and, you know, what they'd done for a living and how many children there might have been. So I've always had a bit of an imagination in that sense. But also, I think that I have a sense that it is a living thing, you know?
I can feel, you do feel a lovely atmosphere when you come in. Yeah.
It's taken a while. And I get emotional. Yes, I do get emotional. I often say to people that I feel like a white Aborigine because this is my place. Not the house so much as the area. I have a spiritual connection with the area, you know. The thought of maybe having to leave it, not once again, maybe not the house, but the thought of having to leave the area with so many family connections, very upsetting. Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay. Just want to give you a moment to compose. Do you still have a lot of family in the area?
No, not anymore. I have a cousin who lives around in Trinity Avenue, and he's the youngest son of my mother's eldest sister. But they're all gone, you know, and my mother's dead. They're all of her family now gone.
Why have they all left? That seems to be what's happening, that the younger generations are moving out.
Well, I think that, like, see, in my brother's generation, I mean, education was better. There were more opportunities. And when they got out and started earning money, I guess they set their sights on owning something for themselves instead of living in a house that somebody else owned and paying rent all their lives. And indeed, that's where a lot of us have really been caught between a rock and a hard place. Because, to be honest with you, if I had paid off a mortgage, the amount of rent that I've paid to the department over the years, let alone the amount of money that I've put into the place to make it very livable and comfortable, I'd be much better off because at least at the end of the day, I'd have an asset. And there are a number of people who have been caught in that trap here, you see. And we were just the generation that perhaps didn't quite recognise that earlier on. And also, to be honest with you, two divorces doesn't help. They don't help because, you know, economically it always, you know, you're always behind the eight ball. But still, that's, you know, that happens to a lot of people. But having said that...
Let me take you back to asking you about how do you think that the area, the community, has changed in your time here?
Oh, well, it's, you know, the sense of community is really all over bar the shouting in many ways. Those of us that have been here a long time still try and maintain a sense of community. The resident action group, meetings, you know, that's all about having a sense of community. And whilst some of the new people that have moved into the high-rise up in high-rise buildings up in Kent Street and some down in Pottinger Street do come to the meetings to be a part of the community and to sort of, you know, voice their opinions, most of the Department of Housing people that have been moved in over the years don't bother. That there isn't a sense of community amongst those people on the whole. You might get a few, but generally not. And let's face it, if they've been, you don't know whether this is their third move or their fourth move, so maybe you can't expect that they would have a sense of community and want to look after the places. I know that a lot of people who move in here don't like the old houses. They don't like the stairs. They don't like the fact that there isn't an ensuite, right, or at least a toilet within the house near the bedrooms. I mean, you get all of those sort of things said. They just don't like the old houses. And I've actually had a Department of Housing official say that to me, that this isn't necessarily an easy area for them, you know, because A, the houses need a lot of maintenance, they need need an awful lot of money spent on them. And then if they're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars doing up an old house to move a family in who are on welfare and who are paying $60 a week, you don't have to be, an A-grade economist to realise that that can't go on forever.
You know. How do you think things will change further when the Patrick's lease runs out next year?
Well, I know that, incredibly sort of valuable piece of land down there. And I know that various proposals have been put forward. It is still part of Millers Point, even though the authorities, the government, want to keep referring to it now as East Darling Harbour. It is still within the Millers Point precinct. I think that it will be inevitable. It will be a bit like Walsh Bay. Look, we were able to hold up the Walsh Bay redevelopment for about 18 years. And quite frankly, I think that the Resident Action Group and the people in the area should be proud of that, even though the developers, hated us. But had the initial development gone ahead 18, 20 years ago, I think it would have been a disaster for the area. What we forced a lot of the developers to do, and we still didn't win, we didn't win absolutely, was to be more sympathetic to the area, to the history of the area and the type of buildings that were in the area. So we've ended up with what we've ended up with. Still not ideal, but better than it would have been initially.
And it won an award just recently. Did you see
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Mm. That's right.
For the most best integrated modern
That's
structure
right.
with the historical.
But had we allowed, the initial developers to go ahead 2018, 20 years ago, I don't think that would have been the case. Now, I have a feeling you can't progress. Things will move on, whether you like it or not. And bearing in mind that the people who protest in this area are all ageing. You do not get the normal Department of Housing people protesting about the area and that it should be preserved. Because I don't think half of them care one way or the other. Right?
Well, they don't have a history of being politicised.
No, they don't. And they don't. Yes, there's no sort of community loyalty. They're basically only interested in their own life and whether or not the house is big enough, cheap enough, suits them. And I'm not blaming them for that, but that's the reality of the situation. And also, if you're moving I don't want to sound racist because I'm not, but if you're moving Tongans or Maoris or other races into an area, you can't expect them to be sympathetic to a culture that they do not identify with.
Mm.
That's it. Whereas the Millers Point precinct basically was peopled by people whose forebears, we had several families that went back eight generations. More broadly, my mother's family, her mother came from Ireland, her father from Scotland, but four generations of our family lived here, even in that shorter period of time. So there was a continuity and an identity with the area, right? So as we, the older people, who have this continuity and identity with the area, die off, who's going to fight for it?
Plus, you were all interconnected through the activities of the waterfront.
Absolutely, there was that. We went to school together, and a number of people did intermarry. We went to dances together. We went to the King George together. Regardless of race, religion, or creed, we did intermingle. We all did have a common bond. Yes, so. And that you don't get that with the people that are moved in by the department. And that's not the department's fault. That's just the way of the world, or the way things are. So I think that eventually, yes, Hickson Road, Millers Point, will be redeveloped. there will be people who will fight for the type of development that goes on down there, because, as I said, we do have a number of people who come from the high-rise developments in Kent Street to the RAG, and they are very vocal and very active because they want to preserve their little piece of paradise as they see it. They don't want a 25-storey building going up in front of them so that they, A, no longer have a view and, you know, they're looking at another building. So they have their own agenda for fighting for things to remain low-rise. But I also think that in sympathy with the area and in sympathy with the Walsh Bay development, which is not high-rise on the water, it should continue around. I don't think that you can stop it. I think that we have to fight for open space and maybe some sort of community usage, you know, access to the water. But I can't see in the long run, and hopefully I'll still be around here in maybe 20 years' time, if I live to be 85. I can't see, it won't take another 20 years. We won't be able to put off the inevitable for another 20 years, no. So I see development going ahead in one shape or another down there.
Do you think that Australians who don't live in the area appreciate the heritage of the place enough? I mean, tourism is a big thing now down in the Rocks, but it's a very crass kind of tourism.
Well, yes, and I mean, like tourists anywhere, they just want to come and have a look at something that's quaint or, you know, I don't know how many... I suppose you do. You would get a number of Australian people coming. Unfortunately, a lot of them come. A lot of them are younger. A lot of them come to the hotels. They go on the pub crawls. They yell and scream, and, you know, as they leave the pubs every night. We get it constantly. Summer is always worse than winter. It's lovely when it rains and hails because, you know, that's going to keep them away. I don't think that within Australia there is an appreciation of history the way and heritage the way there is in Europe. I've always said that if this precinct were in Europe, and by Europe I also mean England and what have you, that like a lot of those nice villages, they would restrict traffic that goes through it. They would close off streets so there was more pedestrian activity, and they would treat it with the respect that I think it deserves. And I can say to you that I know this house pretty well, having been in it now for nearly 30 years. The cracks that are in the walls now come solely from the degree of traffic that has increased tenfold out along these streets here, this mainly on this side of the street. Trucks, buses, you know, the volumes have increased greatly, although it's nice and quiet at the moment. But of an afternoon, it's like living in a bus depot. Now, you see, I think that shows a lack of respect for the area on behalf of the authorities, because they do use it like a bit of a bus terminal, because it suits them. Because of the closures at Circular Quay, the street closures and the street changes at Circular Quay, they reroute a lot of buses around here that would not normally have come here. So they treat it like a bus terminus, and I think that is not doing the fabric of the houses any good. Mm. And that's... It also takes away from your, peace and quiet enjoyment of where you live. Mm.
Well, Beverly, we've got to wrap it up now, but you wanted to mention some story from your Fort Street primary days?
Oh, yes. I just wanted to say that that when I was at primary school, my mother always used to... I always used to go home for lunch every day, because my mother always believed in giving you a hot lunch, that sandwiches were never considered real food. And so she would always be at home, and I would always come home to something lovely, either a hot bowl of soup or a baked egg custard, or I just wanted to say that in relation to my mother, really, because, you know, not a lot of the mothers did that, and that's not to say that, you know, they weren't doing a good job, but my mother was particularly careful about, you know, the sort of food that you ate, and although we didn't have any money, there was always enough money for good food. You may not have a lot of clothes and a lot of other things in the house, but certainly she was always very, very mindful of putting good food on the table.
And did she do that even when she was working, cleaning at the
RSB? Oh, absolutely, because she worked in the early morning and she worked in the late afternoon. So I would come home for lunch, and my brother too, when he was at Fort Street Primary. And, yes, we always had a hot lunch. And if Dad was working locally, he would walk home and have hot lunch as well. So if he was working on the wharves down at Walsh Bay, he'd walk up, you know, 5 or 10 minute walk. She'd have, you know, hot meal on the table, and then he'd go back to work. We'd go back to school. So, and I think that we weren't the only families that did that, you know. But I think that stems from, I suppose, her mother, who was always an advocate of good food. If you put good food in your belly, she used to say, you're not paying it out to doctors.
Okay, Beverly. Well, is there anything else you want to add?
Only in relation to Miller's Point future. Whilst I can see certain things happening, because, you know, it's inevitable that they will, I would like to think that the Department of Housing have become a little more enlightened in recent years about this community and about what this area really means, not only to the people who live here, but what it probably means to a lot of other Australians who value their history and who would like to see it preserved, and preserved in a good way, you know, not just used as a sort of perhaps a dumping ground for which, you know, sometimes you see happens in other areas. And in light of that, I have to say that I, and a lot of people may not agree with these sentiments, but I am in agreement with the department leasing off some of the bigger houses here that need a lot of money being spent on them to people who are prepared, to private people who are prepared to put their money where their mouth is, who want to live in an old area, who want to live in an old house that's a bona fide old house, not just built like an old house, and who are prepared to look after them and restore them the way and love them the way they should be.
Okay, Beverly, thank you. We'll leave it there.
Thank you.
End of Side A.